from KQED.
Hey everyone, I'm Olivia Allen Price. This is Bay Curious, a weekly podcast that answers listener questions about the Bay Area. Let's dive in and meet the guy who submitted this week's question.
My name is Ali Moradam, and I am from Oakland.
Last year, Ali and his wife were expecting a child. And like a lot of couples do, they were trying to fit in some last-minute trips to their favorite spots before the baby came.
There is this area down by Pacifica over there, and it's really pretty. It's kind of like a cove, almost. We call it Dragonstone, like in from Game of Thrones, because it has that kind of look to it.
It's a special place to them, something of a secret spot. After spending some time at their Dragonstone, they got to wandering around the Pacifica shoreline, and they stumbled upon something.
They had these placards where they tell you the history of the stuff around, and it was talking about the Farallon Islands.
27 miles west of where Ali and his wife stood that day, shrouded in dense fog, the Farallon Islands gnaw their way out of the sea. The small jagged islands are the picture of inhospitality. Windswept, rocky, remote, and surrounded by rough seas. 19th century sailors called these islands the Devil's Teeth because navigating near them is so treacherous.
And I was reading it and I was very surprised that I had never, ever heard of these islands.
On the clearest of days, the islands are visible from shore. But they're far enough away that you kind of need to be looking for them to see them. They're often just on the horizon line, in the fuzzy space where sea meets sky. Reading the placards piqued Ali's interest, and he wanted to know more. So he sent us this question.
What is the history of the Farallon Islands, and why is it closed to public?
Today, we've got an episode that has been on my personal to-do list for a long, long time. We're taking you through the history of the Farallons. And later in the show, we'll venture out there on a boat ride. Trust me on this one, the audio experience is way gentler on your stomach than the real thing. Stay tuned.
Support for Bay Curious is brought to you by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Still family-owned, operated, and argued over. Explore their brews wherever fine beverages are sold, and taste how trailblazing runs in the family. Visit sierranevada.com to find your new favorite beer today.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
Hey, KQED listeners. I'm right now as podcast host Pendarvis Harshaw, dropping a line to invite you to a summer evening of live contemporary jazz at the KQED headquarters in San Francisco, Thursday, June 20th at 7 p.m. We've got a stacked lineup of dope musicians, including vocalist Jamie Z, saxophonist Lydia Rodriguez, and harpist Destiny Muhammad. And newsflash, it's the closing event for our podcast. We've had a great run, so help us celebrate the end of this chapter. Get tickets to Liner Notes Live at kqed.org/events.
There's something about islands that's always intrigued me. Maybe it's human nature to see one from afar and wonder, what's it like over there? The first people of the Bay Area were wary of the Farallons. Local tribes called them the Islands of the Dead, and it's said that they never stepped foot on them. But the English explorer, pirate, and trader of enslaved people, Sir Francis Drake, he was curious. In 1579, he became the first person to leave a record of going on one of the islands. Drake and his men made their way on shore to collect seal meat and bird eggs, a pretty primo haul in those days. He named them the Islands of St. James, a name which obviously did not stick. The name that did stick came about 25 years later, when a member of a Spanish expedition described the string of islands as seven ferayones close together. Farallón is Spanish for a steep rock or cliff. This time around, the name took. The islands look pretty condensed when you spot them from shore, so I was pretty surprised to learn they span 7 miles. That's the width of San Francisco. They're made up of 20 islets in total, though many of them seem like little more than a rock bulging out of the ocean. The tallest and largest of the bunch is the Southeast Farallon, rising 358 feet above sea level. It's the only one that humans have lived on over the years, and by all accounts, it's a pretty tough place to call home. The first people to live there arrived around 1819. They were seal hunters in search of the warm fur pelts that were in very high demand in very cold Russia. Zakhar Shishinov was among them, and his story about life on the island has been recounted in several books over the years.
We had a few planks with us and some canvas, and with that we built huts for shelter. The water was very bad also, being taken from hollow places in the rocks where it stood all the year round. We had no firearms. The sea lions were killed with clubs or spears.
Over the course of a few years, an estimated 200,000 fur seals were killed out on the Farallons. By 1834, the animals were decimated. They weren't seen on the islands again for 140 years. The island's next chapter picks up during the gold rush. Food was scarce in booming San Francisco, and the men who ventured out to the Farallons to collect wild mer eggs quickly found themselves quite rich. An industry sprung up, which Mildred Hoover describes in her 1932 book about the Farallons.
There was one essential item in the equipment of the workers, a loose-fitting jacket with capacious pockets inside the front. At a given signal, the day's operations began. Every man started on the run for a favored spot among the nests. When the loose-fronted jackets were full of eggs, the men descended the slippery rocks with care to deposit their booty in hidden baskets, hidden because of the gulls. Accidents were not unknown, and to fall while wearing a coat full of eggs delayed the worker at least long enough to wash out the pockets with cold sea water.
Egg collecting became so lucrative that in 1863, two men were killed in the Great Egg War. We actually did a whole Bay Curious episode about the Egg War, so hit up our show notes and give that a listen. Navigating the waters around the Farallon Islands has always been extremely dangerous. Quick-moving currents can sweep boats onto the rocks, where the Pacific pounds them into oblivion. During storms, waves can get so big, they swallow boats whole. There are about 400 ship and airplane wrecks in the Greater Farallon Sanctuary. In hopes of warding off disaster, a lighthouse was built at the top of the Southeast Farallon in 1855. It was one of the first lighthouses built on the West Coast. With it came new residents to the island, four lighthouse keepers and their families. As many as 18 people lived on the island at a time in two Victorian duplexes. Charles Nordhoff wrote about their lives in an 1874 edition of Harper's Magazine.
The life of the keepers on the Farallon Light is singularly lonely and monotonous. They live in what would seem to a landman like a perpetual storm. The ocean roars in their ears day and night. The boom of the surf is their constant and only music. The wild scream of the seabirds and the howl of the sea lions, the whistle and shriek of the gale, the dull, threatening thunder of the vast breakers, are the dreary and desolate sounds which lull them to sleep at night and assail their ears when they wake.
Life seemed to have improved somewhat by 1932, when Mildred Hoover wrote about the islands. She says radio reception on the islands was good, so keepers and their families spent their evenings dancing. The lighthouse keepers and their families did have periods of company. During World War II, the Navy operated a radio station on the island, and about 26 men were stationed there. But by the 1970s, the Coast Guard automated the lighthouse, and the keepers left the island for good. Today, the two Victorian duplexes are still standing. They're home to scientists doing studies on the wild seabirds, seals, whales, and sharks that thrive on the islands and in nearby waters.
Our work out here is year-round, every day, 365 days a year, focusing on many different research questions with many different species.
That's Russell Bradley, the former Farallon program manager with Point Blue Conservation Science. He spoke with KQED's Quest program in 2010 about how the unique environment allows them to study species over long periods of time. Our question asker, Ali, wanted to know why these islands are closed to the public. And the reason is that they're now a wildlife refuge. The only way you're getting on them is if you're doing scientific research. You can, however, get an up-close view of the Farallones from a boat. When we come back, we're climbing aboard the Salty Lady for a trip to the Farallones.
Did you ever wonder what it's like to live alone, hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul for 30 years? Or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole for 2,000 miles. The Snap Judgment Podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
The Farallon Islands National Wildlife Refuge has been called one of the most biodiverse marine ecosystems on the planet. KQED's Izzy Bloom took a trip out there for the California Report magazine and brought back this story.
It's Sunday morning, and I'm meeting Chris Biertemfel at the San Francisco Yacht Harbor. He's leading our tour group on an all-day expedition to the Farallones.
It's completely wild and crazy out there. It's like you're on a different planet.
Biertemfel is the California Programs Manager for the Oceanic Society, a nonprofit dedicated to ocean conservation.
Oceanic Society was founded in 1969, and it was started by a group of mariners and sailors and people that were just concerned about the SF Bay and the area that they enjoyed so much.
There are three groups of Farallon Islands, the North, Middle, and South. The Southeast Farallon Island is the largest and only one that's inhabited. Conservation scientists can stay for months at a time at the field research station there. But the island is off limits to everyone else, so we won't actually set foot on it. We board the boat, a 56-foot vessel affectionately called the Salty Lady. And soon enough, we're cruising through the bay with the city at our backs and the Golden Gate Bridge looming large in front of us. We're still in the bay when suddenly...
Whale! Smoke right over here! 9 o'clock! Whale at 9 o'clock! It just spouted right in front of that California sea lion.
What a way to start the season.
Right?
Yeah.
Not even past the bridge yet.
Whenever someone spots a whale, there's a wave of excitement that washes over the passengers. Everyone lurches and stumbles forward to one side of the boat to get a look. Seeing a whale is like winning a prize.
In about 2016, we started getting humpback whales moving east of the Golden Gate Bridge and into the bay.
Becca Lane is one of the naturalists from the Oceanic Society, who's here to tell us all about the marine mammals we're seeing.
In 2019, we started getting these gray whales coming in, but the vast majority of people who live in the Bay Area don't know that you could be motoring along in your recreational boat and, whoop, spot a whale right there.
Why is that a more recent thing?
So what we're thinking as far as the gray whales is that they're just not getting enough food up north to last them the entire year to go back up to their northward breeding ground. So they are coming into the bay, and we do believe it's related to, you know, changing climate.
We continue moving west, sailing directly under the Golden Gate Bridge and out of the bay. Then we make a stop at a cove just a little ways up the Marin coast to see some harbor seals.
They usually like to kind of hang out on the rocks over here.
Looks like he's smiling.
I know, they're so cute. And they're a little bit more shy of people, a little bit more shy of boats, compared to like the California sea lions, which are kind of loud. We kind of compare harbor seals more to like cat-like versus California sea lions, which are more dog-like, you know, louder, more energetic.
Oh, like their personalities?
Yeah, their personalities.
As we continue on our way, the water gets choppier and the boat is rocking back and forth. I'm starting to regret not taking the Dramamine they told me to take to keep from getting nauseous. We head up past the Point Bonita Lighthouse in the Marin Headlands, past a yellow buoy covered in sea lions. And less than 2 hours later, we arrive at the Farallons. The boat slows to a stop in front of the 70-acre southeast Farallon Island. I'm taking it all in when Michael Pearson, a naturalist with the Oceanic Society, points out a section of the island called Lighthouse Hill.
You can see the lighthouse all the way up on top.
Below the lighthouse are steep, rocky cliffs. But you can't see much of the rocky face of the island because it's completely slathered with birds.
Can you describe the smell right now?
Okay, it's definitely very pungent, kind of like a cat box that hasn't been changed for a while, that maybe has some rotten fish in it as well.
Pearson says these birds coating the cliffside are common murres. They're slender, black and white birds, sometimes referred to as flying penguins because of their tuxedoed appearance. And he says they're common because last year during peak breeding season, there were around 250,000 common murres on the southeast Farallon Island.
These murres, they pack in really tightly in the colonies where they're all just shoulder to shoulder, basically. And they nest in the same exact location every single year.
We cruise around the island, getting a better view of the field research station, and I'm delighted to see some sea lions swimming playfully after the boat.
The belchy roar is coming from the Stellar sea lion, where the barking is coming from the California sea lions.
As I'm chatting with Pearson about the birds and seals, he suddenly spots a small black bird with a bright orange beak and blonde tufts on the back of its head.
Straight ahead, tufted puffin!
The tufted puffins return to the Farallons each year in April, after spending months at sea.
The Farallons are the southernmost nesting colony for these tufted puffins, and so you'll get people coming from all over the place on these trips specifically to see these little tufted puffins.
We continue our cruise around the island, then head back to San Francisco. On the way, we spot a few more whales.
Whale next to us.
We have a much bigger mother whale and a younger calf.
Finally, at around 5 p.m., we make it back to the San Francisco Yacht Harbor. I'm covered in salt water, and my legs are wobbly as we all gather around Lane, who recounts the species we saw today. Everything from humpback whales to elephant seals and tufted puffins.
And countless harbor porpoises, 5 out of the 6 kinds of things.
I asked Pearson what his favorite part of bringing people to the Farallons is.
Getting to see kind of them experience it for the first time. The Farallons are, you know, sometimes they're visible from the mainland, and so people know about them. It's this mysterious place that they've heard of but never been to. And so when they first get out here and they get to experience it for the first time, it's always kind of magical.
If you want to see the Farallons for yourself, the Oceanic Society gives these trips every Saturday and Sunday from April to November. Just make sure you're better prepared than I was and take some Dramamine before you head out.
That story was produced by Izzy Bloom. Thanks to our friends at the California Report magazine for sharing it with us, Victoria Malione, Sasha Coca, Susie Racho, and Amanda Font. Today's episode also featured reporting from me, Olivia Allen Price. Katrina Schwartz edited the story, and Brendan Willard was our sound engineer. Our social video intern is Darren Tu. Our voice actors in this episode were Alexander Matviev, Gabe Maline, and Beth Heisinga. And big thanks to Ali Mogaram for asking this week's question.
Bay Curious is made in San Francisco at member-supported KQED.
One favor to ask, if you dug today's episode, share it with a friend. I'm Olivia Allen Price. Have a great week.
Hi, Bay Curious listeners. Are you ready to play June's trivia game? Every month, we'll read a question here at the end of our episode. You can give us your answers over at our website, kqed.org/baycurious, or just click the link in the episode description. Out of the correct answers, we'll randomly choose one lucky winner to receive a sweet prize package with Bay Curious swag and Sierra Nevada goodies. Okay, our question for the month is, this cafe in San Francisco's North Beach neighborhood is said to be the first espresso coffee house on the West Coast. What is the name of the cafe? Our trivia quiz is made possible by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Good luck!